Hello and welcome to the Film Basement, episode one. On this week's show, we are going to look at the film 35 years in the making, Blade Runner 2049. I am one of your hosts, Pete Tadone, and joining me on this new birth of the Film Basement is none other than Adam Corbett. Let's go. It's showtime, folks. That was more music from Pogo. You can find that track over at pogomix.net. And you can, of course, find him over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. For this site, you can find us over at lastgenpodcast.com. On Facebook, we have a group going that is called The Film Basement. Just search for that and you can add yourself to it. And I want to just say once again that I am joined now on this, sort of volume, who the hell knows what we're up to, on The Film Basement with Adam Corbett. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Pete?
I'm good. It's kind of weird. Like, we're, so for anyone who's never heard of this show before, this isn't the first time that the Film Basement has kind of been launched or even relaunched. This show is over 2 years old now. It's about 2.5 years since I first started it with a couple of other of my friends. And, just moving and whatnot has changed our situations, and they're doing some other stuff. And Brian, who is one of the original guys, does Disney Magic Hour with me, which many of you may recognize me and Adam from. Adam's been on there a number of times as a guest. And it's, we're started up again because I miss it. I miss talking about all the great films that come out. And that's sort of one of the reasons I wanted to do this, was because I hear so many people, and Adam, you can absolutely, tell me what you think about this. I hear so many people bitch and moan about how there's only bad movies. Oh, Hollywood makes such garbage. There's no good movies anymore, this and that. And I just don't think that's accurate. I think it's accurate to a point. If you only go to see the movie that's, got the massive budget and it's a CG animated mess and it's boring. It's the umpteenth sequel of that thing, even though some sequels can be good, evidently. I just feel like there are so many great films that just go unnoticed, go unrecognized. And I don't really think it's the average moviegoer's fault, because if we didn't look into all this and look up for those new trailers and what's this guy doing? Not everyone has the money to promote themselves so heavily in this, market-driven world. So many great films get totally overpassed. And I wanted us to be able to look at not only the big releases, but to try to find the smaller ones that we dig, try to bring that to some folks. Maybe they're not aware of it, or maybe when a movie costs you $17 to go see, they're not so willing to pull the trigger on a romantic comedy, or something like that. That's like, well, do I really need to see that on the big screen? The answer to that is sometimes, yeah. Even those small films can have a huge impact when you see it on a big screen. So that's kind of like the place that I'm coming from. Thinking like, why are we doing this again? Because that's a good question. Why are we doing this again? So, for your part, like, what is this to you? Like, what's the Film Basement to you?
The Film Basement to me is people that are passionate about movies, that want to talk about them, that are enthusiastic about them, and maybe help spread the word on some of the lesser known releases. And I think it's a wonderful podcast in the previous incarnations, and I'd like to help continue it on.
And that's why we are here. So we're going to talk about stuff that we saw in the theaters. We're going to talk about stuff that we just saw during the week. If there was something that we caught on Netflix or something that we rented that we heard was really good and that we didn't catch in the theater, we're going to talk about that. It's going to be kind of an open forum for what did you do last week? There even may be a big movie that 1 week I don't get to see and Adam gets to see. And I'm just going to let Adam talk about it. Just going to let him tell me what he thought of it. Towards spoilers, which is always a big portion of, shows like this, at the openings and when we're talking about a movie initially, we will not go into spoilers. Halfway through the show, if we are going to do that, we will say it repeatedly, and then you can, we'll say goodbye to anyone who hasn't seen the movie yet, who is, sensitive to spoilers. Some people don't care. There are many people nowadays who don't care. That doesn't impede their interest, their excitement in seeing a movie up on the big screen if they know what happens, which I don't understand how, but, you know, more the power to you, because you don't have to play the mind game of not blowing yourself up by just going onto Facebook every day. So if we ever do a spoiler section, as we will be doing tonight, later on in this review, we will make it very clear that, hey, we're going to hit the spoiler area of it. Thank you so much for coming. We'll see you next week. You know, all that good stuff. So with all that kind of laid down, Adam, you had one other thing you wanted to say?
Speaking of spoilers, did we want to get into the Star Wars trailer?
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. Yes. Thank you. I don't know why I write things down. I really don't. What did I say? Was that like 3 minutes ago?
It was literally 3 minutes before we started.
So tonight, right now it is Monday. It is 7 p.m. This is going to be releasing, I want to say tomorrow. I'm in San Francisco the rest of the week, so I'm going to schedule it for, I believe, tomorrow. Maybe tonight. Who cares? Why not? So tonight, in a couple of hours, we are going to get the second big trailer of Star Wars The Last Jedi. This, I would assume, is the last trailer that they give, like, you know, a release date and a teaser for a teaser for. And the thing that's happened in the last 24 hours that's made this so so fascinating, I hate the word interesting, that's made it so fascinating is that Rian Johnson was asked on Twitter by someone, you know, hey, should I watch this or avoid it and go in clean? And Rian Johnson, in full honesty, was, you know, he's like, you know what? There's some things that you might consider a spoiler. And so if you want to go in clean, avoid it, but it looks good. So where do you fall on that? What are you going to do tonight when that trailer hits and, you know, hundreds and thousands of people share out that link for that thing, you know, all saying they're crying, because that's what people do when they watch trailers. They cry nowadays because that's what they want to hear on the internet, which is idiotic. But, like, are you going to watch it?
I am going to watch it live. I'm going to fire up the football game on ESPN and actually watch the trailer. I'd like to see it on the TV first before it gets dumbed down to my iPad or phone, which, of course, I'll be watching it 35, 40 times probably after that, like the Thor Ragnarok trailer. I'm still watching that one. So I will definitely be watching it.
Okay, so we have an experiment with this. I will be the control. I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to watch it, and then in a couple of months, when the movie hits, we can discuss further, you know, what did you know and what don't I know going in? Because sometimes you can derive a lot from shots, maybe too much. Mm-hmm. And even though I thought they did a phenomenal job with promoting The Force Awakens, you know, we know we're expecting, as an audience, we're expecting that the middle film has some, you know, shockers or whatever, you know, some bigger reveals, because there were a lot of questions laid down in Force Awakens. And for Force Awakens to, regardless of whether or not a person didn't enjoy it, the movie was a huge success critically and from fans. You know, box office, I don't really care. Like, box office is not a measure of success, which is also another thing we can talk about tonight with Blade Runner. But it has a great cinema score. It got a great response on Rotten Tomatoes. It was a large success. But if we look back at that film in like 4 years from now, specifically, and they put out these questions and then just left them not to be answered because they weren't fully thought out, I think Force Awakens is going to age badly very quickly.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that? Like, if we don't learn how Maz got Luke's lightsaber, I feel like that's kind of important, because how the hell did that happen? Like, I have no problem with them doing that, but you've got to explain that, because she even says it's a story for another time.
Exactly. And hopefully, at the time, I was thinking, oh, I hope they don't throw it to a comic book or a TV show kind of thing, or just leave it out there. Unfortunately, we're not going to really know. I don't know if we're going to know in this movie. We might not know until the last movie, the Abrams episode 9.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things. Hopefully it gets answered within the movie. I like that. But unfortunately, we're not going to know. I don't know until this movie's done and we move on to episode 9. And the whole picture's there. We're going to have a lot of dangling threads there.
I mean, for me, I believe that I don't care if they do it this film or the next film, but I think it should be within the trilogy. I also kind of feel like it'll probably just be in the comic book somewhere.
They've
done that a couple of times where they explain out sort of things like that.
Yeah, 3PO's arm, I believe, was explained in a comic book or something.
Yeah, it was. And, it was. Yeah. So, you know, we will see what happens. Tonight will be fun and exciting. I am going to be buying my tickets tonight. For a Dolby Cinema Theater. That's an AMC. I believe AMC is going to be putting their tickets up on sale tonight. So I'll take care of that. And I'm really excited to see that. But there's a lot to see before that comes out. And there's a lot to talk about right now with one of the most surprising releases in recent memory. I mean, when Split came out and Split ended the way that it did, it was like, what the hell just happened? And if you didn't see Split, I don't want to ruin that for you. This was, Blade Runner is a cult sci-fi classic film that has aged well. It has become, more of a staple of film history as time has gone on after being very, muddled in reception in the very beginning and not being, a box office hit, despite it, starring Harrison Ford, who was one of the most recognizable faces in cinema at the, especially like, that's right in between Star Wars and Indiana Jones during it. It's a year after Indiana Jones. Ridley Scott, with Alien is coming off that. So, like, there's a ton of, speed behind that film, but never found an audience. You could say that, studio interference harmed that film, but I don't even think that if you put the final cut out on day one, it would have been a box office success. It's still a film that takes its time. It is methodical. And that's sort of what people love about it, though, is that it takes so much time to let that atmosphere and that city kind of grow on you and you feel like you're part of it. So, I mean, let's just start with Blade Runner before we talk about 2049. Do you think you should see Blade Runner 1982 before you even step in a theater on this one?
I think it would help you. My girlfriend and I went to see this the other night, and she had never seen the original. That being said, she didn't find the new one difficult to follow, or she had a few questions, but it wasn't anything like, oh, I'm totally lost. So I don't think it's a prerequisite, but it see the movie. It's an excellent movie.
Yeah, I was with somebody who had never seen it. Our friend Angelina was with us, and she had never seen Blade Runner. Her husband Mike did, loves it, he's a huge fan. She had never seen it, so I was very curious of what her reaction was going to be to it. She also had no issue. She missed some of the connective tissue, which also may give you a bigger dramatic impact at certain moments. But she actually enjoyed the film very much, and she said, no, I never felt lost. I felt that there was more I should know about these people, a couple of people, but I knew what this story was. Like, I understood what we were doing in this setting. So Blade Runner 2049 comes at us, and, we had to kind of start off with, who it's shot by, because Ridley Scott was originally going to do it, but then, Denis Villeneuve, and I'm sure I'm saying his name wrong, and I apologize, not that he's listening to this, but he is coming off of, just a hell of a run right now.
Yes, he
Prisoners
is
a really great dark film. It maybe has its little problems, but it's great. I really like it. Sicario is fantastic. And Arrival, I think, was equally as fantastic and wholly different. It has
absolutely.
He definitely has a pace to him. He is not a filmmaker who's in a rush to tell his story. But he's able to go from, crime, drama to sci-fi, but like Arrival is such a different sci-fi. It's like the way Close Encounters is a sci-fi and Star Wars is a sci-fi. The two, they're in the same genre, but they have very, very different physical outlooks, And now, he was brought in to do Blade Runner, and I got excited when I heard that. I was like, oh, all right. That's something that now I feel ups this game for me.
Yeah, definitely added a pedigree to it. It made me excited. I've seen his previous work, and I couldn't be more than thrilled that he was doing this.
And then on top of that, you know, it is announced that Roger Deakins is going to be the cinematographer. And, you know, I mean, I'll just give you the rundown, or at least some of it, because it's, you know, it's incredible, this list. Skyfall, True Grit, A Serious Man, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, possibly one of the best films he ever shot, like visually. No Country for Old Men, House of Sand and Fog, A Beautiful Mind, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Obviously, a lot of work with the Coen brothers going all the way down the line, all the way down to Fargo, Shawshank Redemption, Hudsucker Proxy. I mean, look, it can go on and on and on. He's never won an Oscar, though. It's kind of become like the new, you know, the new Martin Scorsese is, you know, now it's looked upon as Roger Deakins, because I actually thought he was going to win for Skyfall. I thought that was a lock.
Oh, that was amazing cinematography in that movie.
I still think that would, for me, that was the winner of that year. So he was being brought in. So, you know, my visual, meter like jumped through the roof. And then we have all the add-ons to the cast. You know, we have Harrison Ford, returning, which was met with a lot of skepticism, you know, because this kind of environment that we're in now. And Ryan Gosling is put in the role. And I guess some people are iffy on Gosling as an actor. I kind of dig him like a lot. So we have these pieces come together. But, you know, that's here nor there. Let's talk about the finished product. And I've heard, you know, Rotten Tomatoes has 89%. CinemaScore has an A-. But for whatever reason, as I'm looking at stuff on Facebook, everyone's claiming that this movie is 50-50. And I'm like, well, where is that happening? You know, is it just because it got such a good response? Like, people are like, yeah, but, and like they're turning, because that's the weird, stupid thing to do on the internet. I'm really confused by the claims of, oh, this is a 50-50 film, or, you know, people are going to be split on it, when that doesn't seem to be the situation at all.
I know. It seems that even the and this has been happening since maybe Saturday night, Sunday, the box office numbers started coming in, and all of a sudden I started seeing, oh, there's a problem with this movie. It's too slow.
Yeah.
It's this. It's that. It's now, oh, did they wait too long? Did nobody want this? It just like blood in the water, because apparently box office numbers have to be perfect or a movie is just going to get trashed. And an excellent movie like this.
Yeah. So here, I mean, I'll just keep this going. 8.6 user rating on IMDb. That is ungodly high. That's 52,000 reviews and an average of 8.6. It's got an 81 on Metascore. Again, Rotten Tomatoes was an 89. I believe CinemaScore was an A-. There's no 50-50 on this film as far as like the reaction from people. It's just that the people who didn't like it all of a sudden feel offended that other people are enjoying it. And I just don't get it. Or, you know, and you can say that I feel offended when people don't like it. Like, I don't care if people don't like it. But you can't claim that this film is coming in like really divided when nothing shows that. Like, that's the problem. You know, I get it. If 25% of people don't enjoy a movie, they're 100%, and, you know, I understand it. You know, I like movies that people don't like. I love The Fountain. That is probably my most guilty, like, yeah, I love The Fountain. Absolutely love it. People hate The Fountain, and I 100% understand it. I hate Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I cannot stand sitting through it. People love that movie. There are people who adore every inch of that film. I hate it to death. So, like, everyone can have their thing, but you can't claim because you didn't like it that, oh, well, half the people don't like it. That doesn't make sense.
Just to give you perspective, the original Blade Runner had an 8.2 rating on IMDb, which is still
a great score. Yeah, that's
anybody would kill
high
to have that score on attached to their movie,
especially IMDb, because people are usually just they're rough.
Yeah, they
you
are.
Know they're a rough score, because IMDb is the land of tens and ones. You know, for a lot of times. So, you know, towards this film, though, what did you think? I mean, so that's the thing. Like, I wanted to talk about how people are reacting to this film, because I find it so fascinating that there's been this uproar of like, oh, I don't really know if it's as good. And you're like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess for some people, of course, you know, it's not going to be good. But you cannot possibly claim that that is a half or a majority of the people who are going to see this film. So what are we talking about? Anyways, all that insanity aside, when you stepped into the theater to the moment you stepped out, what did you think of Blade Runner 2049?
I was blown away. It was... I don't like to label a perfect film for any stretch. I think there's improvement to be made for everything.
Yes.
But I was so satisfied, more so than I thought I would be. And I like the original so much. It was almost like I was trying to find something wrong with it and be like, no, I still like the original more. And I was having a tough time. It was comparable and, dare I say, maybe a little bit better than the original movie. And I don't say that a lot about a sequel taking place 30 years plus after the original. It's just it left me very just wowed, just really.
So there were two movies this year, and they came out relatively close to each other that touched on things that I really enjoy, and they are either an adaptation or a follow up. The one was Dark Tower, and Blade Runner 2049. And when they were both announced, you know, I was equally like, I wanted to be excited, you know, for both projects. But also, there's a cynical side of me that says, well, you know, seen these things go down before and they don't go well, especially with adaptations that you've been trying to make forever in the Dark Tower's case. And then everything that was surrounding the Dark Tower made me very trepidatious. And as much as I went into that film, I was like, I don't care. Let me see what it is. I'm going to vote it on its own merits. I left that theater just down. I was like, oh man, that was fucking terrible. When I was going into Blade Runner, I had heard a lot of positive stuff, but I was like, all right, well, you know, everyone who gets an early screening on Twitter says it's the greatest thing they've ever seen. We see that with everything that gets an early screening and they let people tweet about it. It's either glowing, but like, but you know, it's amazing if you like that kind of stuff. Like, they're still just making sure they get the free ticket for the next screening.
Exactly.
So you can't really listen to those kind of reviews at the first time because there is a large contingency to believe that they're just saying what they want so they get into the next press screening. I don't blame them. It must be fun. Anyway, not that I would do it, but it must be fun. Not that I'll get invited, but it must be fun. So... sitting down, I was excited, but I wanted to just see what the movie was like. I was really just sort of curious of what the hell is this movie? And we're not going to go into the plot at this particular moment, but where they bring the plot is they expand on the ideas and the themes within Blade Runner, the original, so much more, and so much more in a Philip K. Dick kind of way, that it feels more akin to the original novel than the original film does to the original novel. And I also think that what they introduce and this world expansion that they really put into this film kind of makes you watch the first movie, and I think it makes it better because there are things that you can look at and you're like, oh, there's a lot of wheels turning in the background here that we're totally unaware of. Now, I'm not saying that they sure as shit had no idea about that when they were making it in 82. But it works in that way that you can say, huh, all right, there's some more going on in the original Blade Runner now when I look back at it. And we can argue that Deckard is not a really well-shaped character in the first film. And Harrison Ford's piece in this film shapes that character much greater. And I think... makes me have an emotional attachment to the character of Deckard that I never really had in the first one. My emotional attachment was Roy Batty.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was supposed to be intended. It was to show the humanity that existed within a replicant versus somebody who's supposed to be flesh and blood. And they were supposed to blur that line really well. And I think the 1982 version definitely did that. And they went for something similar but different emotionally in this one, and I think it works so well.
This is definitely trying to get more of an emotional response out of you than the first one was. I won't say that the first movie was cold, because the Tears and Rain, you know, piece at the end is, I think, is just an amazing, a phenomenal emotional still, height of cinema. Huge, and of course, huge marks for Rutger Hauer for, you know, owning every moment of that, you know, that he's on screen. But this film, Gosling shows you so much while doing so much little physically that he reminds me of Pacino at his peak in Godfather 2, where the acting is within his stance, within his body temperature, within his eyes. You know, he really, really delves into it, which he's always done. Like Drive was another great example of that kind of, you know, that inner sadness that he doesn't say it out loud, but you can just see it, you know, under the surface, you can see it. And he works it the entire film. He works that kind of work. And on the flip side of it, the more outward, in a sense, like wearing his emotions on his sleeve, is Deckard a little bit in the little that we see him, at least compared to Kay, you know, compared to Ryan Gosling's character. So I thought that was a fun play. You know, when the two of them are on screen, I mean, I would say it's the most quote unquote enjoyable part of the movie.
Definitely. Yeah, it was a nice reversal of the roles almost. He was the no-nonsense Blade Runner, of course, in the first one. And then in this one, he's not Roy Batty, but the emotions are more apparent in this one than they were in the first movie by far.
You're talking towards Deckard? Or are you talking towards okay.
Yeah, Deckard. Deckard.
That's another thing. You know, there's always been, you know, that big question of, you know, is Deckard a replicant? Harrison Ford says no. Ridley Scott says yes. And there's never been a definitive answer on that. And this isn't, you know, I don't really think this is spoiling anything. But I'm very happy to say that, you know, that mystery is kept alive.
It is.
And I don't ever want to know the answer. I think you can take some things from this film and make your own assumptions, but I also think that some people are trying to trick others into believing certain things.
Right. It's funny because I think at the end of the first movie, before this one came out, you kind of wanted to know, at least I did. And at the end of this movie, I don't really want to know anymore. And it does that to me. And I think that's a good thing. It makes me not want the question answered anymore.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of you know, nurturing that very slightly. They weren't shoving it down your throat, but there was just enough recognition of that lingering question to satisfy that curiosity, but then also to keep that curiosity alive. You know, going, I don't know what happens in the future of anything like this, you know, but there's also some, you know, great smaller performances in this film. In particular, I want to talk about Ana de Armas, who is Joy. And again, you know, I don't want to go too far into who is what and all that kind of stuff, so I'm not going to go into it. But just an absolutely heartfelt performance out of her, you know, playing a central character in Kay's life. And they do things that other films kind of did earlier. I would say there's some elements of her, Spike Jonze's Her, you know, lingering around.
I picked that up too.
The play of this, I don't think anyone's really like, you don't have to be Batman to kind of figure that one out. But they play it in their own way, and it's quite beautiful what they do with that. And then on top of that, there might be someone who steals this movie from everyone. And that's Sylvia Hawks or Hooks. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly. She plays a character, Love, and she legitimately may steal this film from
everyone.
She's
a badass.
Yeah. She just owns this film by the throat.
Literally.
Yeah, no puns intended, but she just has this movie. It almost moves at the pace of which she decides. You know, it's kind of funny in that sense. Yeah, again, we're not going to go into the hows and the whats, but she's absolutely on fire in this film and never over the top. And another character who shows a wide range of emotions, you know, in a film that's about, you know, what is to be human. You know, you could say it's that, like, is it a soul? Is it, you know, the ability to do human things? Is it the ability to love? You know, what is it? You know, what is it that makes us different? And what's separating that wall from inhumanity to humanity? And she is right on that wall. She sits on it. and looks down upon most, I would say. You know, so that was something very special. And what's your thoughts on Jared Leto? Because I know that everyone is very, they have a personal reason why they don't like Jared Leto, despite them never, most people never meeting him and, you know, this and that. What are your feelings towards Leto and his work here?
Jared Leto is interesting because despite what you might see in the trailer, he does not have a lot of screen time. I'd be surprised if it clocked in about 10 minutes, if that.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was fine. There was a lot of monologuing coming his way, of course, and you know, this is my plan. I think he was okay. I would like to have gotten maybe a little bit more background because I started thinking, oh, is this what it is? Is he like human? Is he a replicant? I kind of started thinking that, and I don't think the film really was supposed to ask that question, but it kind of did for me. I'm not really sure what his real background is. So it was brief, but as far as acting goes, I think he was fine. I didn't have any issues. Nothing set the world on fire, but he was fine as a character.
I dug him in this. I thought that he was in it just enough. Because the character he plays is a very Leto-ass character, and there is a possibility for oversaturation with that within this film. So the fact that he was used so sparingly, I think, helps immensely. And where he pops in and what he does have to say, is important. And it lays out, you know, he is monologuing the theme sometimes.
Yes,
but he is also giving you the reasoning behind that theme, you know, like, why does one care about this kind of stuff? And, you know, he has his own view on it, but he certainly has his own answers towards it. Visually, I think the film is one of the most impressive films I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
If this doesn't get Deakins his Oscar, look, Oscars are fun. They don't really mean anything. You should never take them too seriously. But if he doesn't win for this one, then it's just a joke. Like, it gets to a level where you're like, okay, it's just silly now. But I really do think that this will be the one that he finally brings one in for. I'm curious of how this does in that sense going down the road. You know, towards like award season and whatnot. You know, we're not that far away from it.
No, we're right in that season where there's extra attention being paid to movies like this coming out. I think it's still going to be fresh enough in everybody's minds that it should get a nomination at the very least. But I think it really would get a win. It's just amazing.
I don't know the full release for the rest of the month. I mean, I'm sure that there's some, you know, huge, some smaller films, dramatic pieces that are going to sneak, you know, some really kind of like Oscar movies later on. Of course, everyone is talking very, very highly of Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water, so I'm very excited for that. It's another, you know, sci-fi film that's getting a lot of great buzz for being one of the best films of the year. It's a cool thing to see for me personally. I think Villeneuve just kills this, and I think that's like the fourth different way I've pronounced his last name. If anyone knows how to say it, just send me an audio file of you saying it, and it'd be great.
I've always said Villeneuve, so that's...
Villeneuve, yeah. You know what? Great. That's, you know, however
yes,
it is.
It's official.
It works for it. I don't want to keep rattling on about the positive. Did anything not work for you? Let's talk about that.
Did anything not work for me? I don't think so. I did notice, I mean, this is a, what, 2 hour, 49 minute movie?
Yes, I believe
I did notice
so.
I did notice in the third act. 244, okay. I did notice in the third act it started to drag a little bit. That's not saying it was a bad kind of slowness, but I started noticing time at that point. So I think maybe a couple scenes could have been tightened a little. But other than that, the content, no, I've got no complaints whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't want to lose much of this movie. I really don't. I think that it just seeps itself in its atmosphere. And if you're not comfortable with that, that's fine. You know, not everyone has to be comfortable with the speed at length at which a film takes itself. If that mattered, then Kubrick wouldn't have made 2001. Tarkovsky wouldn't have made anything. You know, Seven Samurai wouldn't be 3.5 hours long. I just don't think that it matters as it's different things can engage different folks. You know, again, it's all down art. You know, ultimately, film is an art, and the art lies, you know, to the eye and the ear of the beholder when it comes to film. So, you know, you're going to find your own judgment and your own settlement within it. But I just have absolutely no problem with the length here at all. I just don't. So if you do, I understand it. It has, you know, it's nothing.
No, we don't argue about it.
Yeah. But I would press, if you haven't gone to see Blade Runner yet, I think you absolutely should go see Blade Runner. It's one of the few films that I will say you should see this on the largest screen you can find.
See it in IMAX. I saw it on a standard movie screen in my local area, and I feel like I should have seen it in IMAX. The colors didn't pop as much as I could tell were conducive to an IMAX screen. So if you're able to see it, please see it on an IMAX. I think I'm going to go see it again next week, and I want to see it on that. I want to see real sharpness and brightness to the colors.
Yeah. To be clear, it wasn't shot in IMAX, and usually anything that's upsampled for that kind of stuff, I'm like, meh. If, you know, the IMAX presentation I went to was kind of gorgeous. There's a scene in the beginning with a character that Dave Bautista plays, where he's behind a screen door, and you could see every line of that screen door. And then when he walks through it, you can see that he clearly is now no longer behind a screen door because it's that clear. It was really, really beautifully presented. And I cannot wait to see what this looks like in 4K.
4K.
You know, with HDR going. I mean, now, if you go to Dolby Cinema, I do not know if they're like giving it a Dolby Vision treatment on the colors. It is playing at a Dolby Cinema near me, and I will probably go see it while it is there. So I'll come back and kind of update that, you know, for anyone. You know, I'll be doing that over at the Facebook page. Again, you know, if you go to the Facebook, you know, the Film Basement, search for us, add yourself to the group. You know, I'll definitely update everyone on my feelings of that. But to me right now, Blade Runner is one of my favorite films of the year. It is probably my favorite film of the year. And I look forward to other films trying to challenge it, because it's great to see great movies, and then it's great to see even greater films. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you're always going to get your disappointments, Dark Tower being my number one example this year, even though that was kind of called, you know, before it was coming. But the amount of secret, this is another great thing. I didn't know anything about going into this film. Now, obviously, that hasn't helped with its marketing and it making money. But I didn't know anything about this movie, and I was paying attention, and I was waiting for it to come out. It had my attention. But, man, they kept everything under wraps with a film that has more than one reveal.
Yes.
I cannot believe in this day and age that a film with Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford flew under the radar and continues to, evidently. And they kept everything a secret.
The trailer didn't give away too much, and I thought it was a perfect trailer. It really it was nice. It told you what you needed to know, but it didn't say, oh, okay, well, there's a twist coming here, there's a twist there, and we're going to spoil half the movie for you, and Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, that whole movie's in the trailer. That's a bummer.
Yeah, they did the complete opposite. If you want to see how to make a trailer for a great sci-fi movie, watch Blade Runner 2049's trailer. I think it was one of the best trailers of the year.
So that is our thoughts on Blade Runner 2049 towards that. So I absolutely go see it in the theater if you haven't already. And if you didn't dug it, you know, tell us what you thought worked and what you thought didn't over at the Film Basement, you know, Facebook page, and we can continue the conversation over there. If you are uninterested in spoilers, we're not going to talk about spoilers very long. But if you're uninterested in spoilers, I want to thank you for tuning in tonight. Thank you so much. Have a good weekend. Go enjoy that Last Jedi trailer if you choose to. And go see Blade Runner. Go see more movies. And thanks to you guys and whoever wants to stick around. We are going to start talking about spoilers on Blade Runner 2049. Spoiler warning right now. 3, 2, 1. We are now in spoiler land. I am so happy that they did not reveal that Deckard was a replicant or not.
They definitely gave it the proper amount of teasing, just as much as the first movie.
Yeah. Do you think he is? Yeah.
Personally, I think he is.
I don't think he is.
You don't think he is?
I don't. I don't because the writers don't. That's because I don't think the movie gives you any information one way or the other. You could take when Leto's character of Wallace eggs him on to, well, maybe you fell in love with Rachel because you were programmed to. Now, he could be saying that in two different ways. He could be saying that as in, like, a greater power programmed you, that you would, fate would lead you to falling in love with this android. Or someone literally coded you, another human, a human coded you, Tyrell, to fall in love with the advancement that he had made that he wanted to create life with.
Yeah, the reason I'm saying that he is, and I think it further reinforced that, was at the very beginning, the credits, the little blurb says, well, there was a series eight that did not have a lifespan. So why put that in there? Why even go there? So I think it, the Leto thing definitely kind of said, okay, maybe not. But I felt that opening graphic was like, okay, so we're kind of saying it.
See, nah, I'll disagree with you there, because I think they're telling you that because if we're going under the same rules as the original film, blackout or not, all the replicants are going to be dead. So we have to make a reason. We have to get a reason out there as to why a blackout that happened in 2020, if I remember correctly, was the year in the film that it happens, the year after the first film takes place.
Yes.
All those replicants would be gone in like 4 years. So there would be no need for Blade Runners because there would be no more blades to run. So saying that Tyrell had, you know, cracked this code and, well, not Tyrell personally, but that they had created, you know, this infinite life, possibly, android, is the only reason that we still have it and gives Kay a reason for his existence, because I had no idea that going into this film that Gosling was a replicant.
Yeah, I didn't know either, but I kind of suspected, not from any marketing or anything like that. I had a feeling that that's where they were going with him.
Did you like the way that they kind of, they don't make like a big deal out of that. Like, they're not like, oh, is he not? Like, they introduce him in the very beginning, very early, as a replicant. Like,
right. And I think that they had to because of the mystery with him later on. Is he the child? And they were, this was one of the things that impressed the hell out of me about this movie, is they teased it, but they didn't go with it. Like, they didn't say, oh, yeah, he's now the prodigal son. He's now this. I like how it swerved. I was completely shocked by it. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. See, I never thought that. I really didn't think that he was going to be the son, because it made too much sense and he was sniffing it out too easily. And I was like, I feel like someone's doing a double-ended run on this, where, like, they're leaving the breadcrumbs to lead to a boy,
right?
Because it's really a girl. Now, I didn't pick up on who that would be, and I didn't even want to mention her name in the first half of the discussions. Yeah. I didn't want to get into it at all.
Right.
I didn't want to bring it up at all because I didn't want to lead anyone into, you know, getting further into that. But when, you know, we find out that, you know, the dream maker, you know, I guess we can call her in a sense. I forget what her first name was. Do you remember what her first name was? I can't even remember right now because I'm thinking about too many different things all over the place. When it's revealed that it's her, it worked for me, and I did not expect it because they had introduced so many other people who were, you know, in here for a moment, gone here for a moment, and they were just building up the world around them. Where then the idea that, oh, it was this other character that I met just for, you know, a passing moment. It was a beautiful scene. But it all made sense then, because you were like, oh, well, yeah, of course. That's why she cries, because she's watching her own memories.
I want to go back and watch this movie again just to see that, because I picked up on it, but I didn't pick up the emotion coming from her. I was too focused on Gosling and what he was going through. And then I was seeing her, but I wasn't really focused on her. And her character's name is Dr. Anna Stellan.
Stellan. Yeah. That's right. Yes.
And so I really want to go back, now that I know everything about the movie, I want to go back and see those moments that I just, oh, let's see what she's up to, you know?
Yeah. No, if you, that was, I did kind of get an idea, like, during that scene. Now, she had already shown that she gets emotionally attached to the memories that she creates. Right. So her tearing up at watching, you know, Kay's memory wasn't a dead giveaway, because they established a good reason that she would be, just because she takes it so personally, her work.
Right.
But then when you look back at it,
it adds a new meaning to it.
When you really watch the look that she just glances up at him quick, it's just so well timed. And they play that movie quite beautifully, that moment quite beautifully. That's what I didn't expect out of this film, was the emotional reaction that I had to certain moments.
Exactly.
When Wallace is asking questions about Rachel to Deckard, you know, and Harrison Ford like starts crying, I got real emotional. Like, I did too. I didn't cry, but I got choked up. And you know, I watched Blade Runner today. They don't really expand on that relationship very well.
No.
But he makes you feel in this film that she was the one and only. And it's a killer. Like, when they bring out her newer replicant, you know, a Rachel V2, I was shocked. And I was also shocked at how damn good it looked.
I was just about to say that. It looked really good. I thought it looked way better than Tarkin and Princess Leia from
Rogue. Yeah, Leia I'm fine with. I thought Leia looked fine. I thought Tarkin looked okay too. But this looked really good.
Eerie good.
Yeah, that was some crazy shit. And, you know, Sean Young did give her likeness rights to the film. You know, she totally gave them to him. And then Loren Pita was the performance double. And, man, she just has the walk down and the movement, and absolutely phenomenal work there from the effects crew. Here's my question for you. Well, there's another moment that I just really loved, and obviously Gaff. Seeing Gaff, I almost fell out of my fucking chair.
I knew it was coming though, but I was like,
see, I had no idea. Again, like, I did really well on this one of not knowing shit. When he popped on screen, I was like, what? And, you know, as soon as, like, Gosling said, like, you work together, which is kind of incorrect. But
it is.
But Gaff explains it in a funny way. He's like, yeah, we work together. He liked to work alone. I liked to work alone. It worked out. So that's why we worked together. Meaning, we didn't work together, but we were on paper, we were working together. But then we would just go do our own thing. So I thought that was really fucking smart. But when he says, there's a little line that he says, and he looks up and gives a little half smile, and he says, you know, towards Deckard, he's like, something in his eyes. And he looks up, and I was like, you sneaky bastard. Because the red eyes of the final cut has always been like that thing that Ridley Scott is like, well, that's why he's a fucking replicant. And I wonder, you know, like, if the writers don't think that Deckard's a replicant, they still put that line in there. You know, and the screenwriter, Hampton Fancher, he wrote the original. You know, the man's been around. So for that line to get through, he just must love fucking with people. Like, there's a certain point where you're like, oh, you're just messing with us now, because he puts that in and he sells it so well. He just looks up and has a little smile just for a second. Yeah. And then putting the sheep down, you know, just a great reference to the book. I thought also a nice reference to the book when Kay was looking through the DNA records, and Joy says something like, shouldn't it be okay to dream? And he says, not for us, you know. And of course the book, you know, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Right.
You know, I thought that was a pretty direct, reference to that. I want to talk about the scene when Kay makes a decision to go and save Deckard. When he is beaten and defeated, he's got the blood running down his face, and those beautiful neon lights are hitting him.
And he sees the giant advertisement of Joy. And
yeah. What do you think is going through his head?
I don't know. It was – I knew he was resigned to the fact that he was basically a cog in the machine. I think he was coming down from this. He wanted to be more, and he felt like he, because he wasn't this child, he couldn't be more. But I think he was wrestling with those emotions internally, and I think that's what he made the decision to go and I think he was always intending to go rescue Deckard. I don't think there was a moment where he was going to take him out or anything like that. But he was, you could feel that was like raw, just raw when he was.
See, I feel like when he was taking that walk, he was deciding whether or not he was just going to disappear.
You think so?
I think so. I think that was a thing that he was going through his head because he felt so lost in the world. But then one of the things that kind of kicks him out of it is that he realizes that the feelings and the passion that he had for Joy, as authentic as they were for him, they are inauthentic. And a real love and a real thing to stand up for and to fight for is right in front of him. And he can make a difference. Like he can do the thing that everyone else would fail at possibly. And that is, get Deckard, basically save Deckard from being eliminated from everybody. But more importantly, like getting him back to his daughter. And I feel that it's his acceptance in, yes, that was fake, even though it meant something to me. But I have something that I can do. And it's time to let go of that which I lost and embrace that which I can save. So I just thought that Gosling's put on a clinic in this one.
That went very like a deep way of thinking. I really thought I still do. I think he felt like he didn't have to be this thing. I think he what he's feeling is real. He was the whole thing with Joy when she gets deactivated for the final time. She says, "I love you," and
yeah.
I think that helped him. And I think when he saw her image, even though it wasn't her, I think that kind of kicked him in the pants a little bit and put him in the right direction.
Yeah, it can go a couple of ways. I would love to get his impact on that and his thought on that. One final thing, and then I want to wrap it up. The last shot of the film.
Oh yeah.
So the last shot of the film is Deckard putting his hand up to the glass and starting to sort of smile, which I mean a genuine smile from Deckard. I don't think we ever saw before, a smirk, yes, but not like a happy smile.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's starting to smile in that moment. So it's this great moment. Do you think the film should end with Deckard or Kay?
It's ultimately Deckard's story, even though 3/4 of the movie was Kay. His ending, I felt, was bittersweet, but it was his ending and Deckard's were both, I thought, beautiful endings. I kind of knew it was going to happen with Kay. I knew I'm hurt, I'm dying. And and there's even some people that are debating whether he actually did die or not. And that's whatever. But I thought it ended the way it should have. And it was a beautiful cutaway. I love the cutaway. It was great. It was like the right moment.
It was the right moment. Because that smile just starts to come on his face. The only thing I was thinking was, we open with a mirror of the first film with the eye opening up. And there's an argument to be had, like you were saying. Kay is in the whole film. I mean, how many scenes occur in this film without Kay in it? What?
Yeah.
10 minutes? Maybe. 15 minutes, maybe? Something like that? 20 minutes, maybe at the most. But it does feel like Deckard's story. It does feel that we are learning that second piece of the Deckard story. Whether or not there's a third, I do not know. I don't know if I want that. But there's an idea in my head of this poetic bookend where the last shot is of his eye closing.
Yeah.
Of Kay's eyes closing. But then you lose that final shot of Harrison Ford's hand.
You also end any possibility of there being a third movie. Like you said, who knows? But if you were to end it that way, you end the series.
And that's the only reason why I feel like they probably didn't go with that is because if you bookend it with the eye closing, the story is done. this is Children of Men. The boat is arriving. We don't know what happens, you know, going right. forward. Spoilers on Children of Men? Sorry. Holy shit, go see Children of Men if you haven't. And that's the only reason that, like, as much as just from a visual standpoint, I'm like, oh, God, it would be such a delicious shot for that to be the last thing that we see. It does end it. Whereas this shot with his hand up on the glass doesn't. You know, there is it's satisfying. Like, I'm satisfied. I'm totally fine. I don't need another movie. But if you give me one, I'm probably going to be really curious as to what in the hell that film is.
Yeah.
And if Harrison Ford and if Deckard's going to pass in the third movie, I want them to cremate him. And just, we never know. I never, ever want to know. I never want a definitive yay or nay, because it, him being human is kind of important, but me not knowing, I think, can be equally as important, personally. So what a triumph, what a surprising triumph this film is. Again, I hope, I really hope that if you didn't see it, you didn't listen to that shit. to everyone who saw it, I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, I hope you found something that you enjoyed out of it. And, you know, on to the next film. There's always more movies coming out. All right, guys, that is going to wrap up this episode of The Film Basement. I want to thank you all for coming back and checking us out. And if this is the first episode you ever heard, I hope you dug it. I hope you come back and definitely make your way over to the Facebook group page. We usually have a lot of stuff, you know, conversations going on there. And you can find that actually directly, facebook.com/groups/filmbasementpodcast. You can also just search for The Film Basement. That will bring it to you as well. If you're already in there, add your friends. You know, let's start up some conversations. I will start a spoiler thread on Blade Runner if everyone would dig it. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, exactly what goes on at the end of that film, you know, in the privacy and not screwing it up for anyone who has not yet to see it, because that's very important. I never think that's fun to do. So, Adam, I want to thank you so much for, you know, getting in on this, you know, joining me for this new version or whatever the hell, you know, we want to call it, a Film Basement, where the soul is still film. That'll never change. Thank you so much for, you know, being my partner on this. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely. Anytime, man.
All right, brother. Why don't we say goodnight to everybody? So, hey, guys, good night. Ladies and gentlemen, good night. We'll see you next week. We're not sure what we're going to do yet, but we're going to take a look at what's coming out, and we'll take care of it then. So, till next week, have fun. Guess what? Watch more movies. We'll be right back.